Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Fred was just telling us that it was 62 balmy degrees when he woke up this morning in his home. Yeah, you want to explain this for the Marie's apparently out of town and
right.
Told Fred to stay strong.
That's right. I asked,
oh
you know,
my God.
I said I'm going to probably turn on the furnace, and she said, "Stay strong."
Oh, like,
no,
my
she
gosh.
Did not. That yeah. is hilarious.
Is there a line where you cannot stay strong? Like if it dips into the 50s, is that allowable?
I'm just figuring over the next couple of days, I turn it on and then turn it off before she gets home.
Well, right. How's
yeah,
she going to
I mean,
know that?
That's the only rational
See,
plan.
The problem
here.
Is that most people do that, but Fred is so honest that he won't do that. Or if he did it, he'd break and he'd say, Marie,
caught.
Guess what I did? Or she'll check on the utility bill. Fred, you turn it on for 20
Fred,
minutes.
62.
Yeah, that's a little chilly.
Yeah, I think it's time. I mean, I turned it on, of course, and then Michael said, dang, I thought we were going to make it to November, and I said, nope.
Close, though. Very, very close.
Yeah, but, I mean, who cares, really? What if there was no calendar? You just would turn it on when it was cold, and 62 is cold.
Yeah, I'm already wearing a sweater around the house, maybe a scarf.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Oh,
that,
see, you want to be so comfortable, Fred. Are you gonna go home tonight? Marie's out of town until when?
She's back on Wednesday.
Okay, well, you got a couple nights. You're going to sit at home tonight, watch the World Series and the football?
I'll turn it on.
Do you have a, I can't remember, do you have a fireplace?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, like, do you
use it? I haven't
used
it yet. Oh, yeah, we use
it. Is
it
real or fake?
It's
like
real,
gas?
Real wood.
Okay, well, build a big fire, man, you know?
Oh, that sounds cozy, Fred.
Right.
It's a good idea.
You and Luna cozying up. Maybe Joyce will come over for a sip of tea or something like that. I think it would be beautiful.
Yeah.
Ethan, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. No complaints. I'm, you know, the weather. I'm not a huge fan of this weather. See, I live in an apartment, and I'm on the third floor.
Okay.
So it's not as cold, but I haven't had to turn on the heat yet either, but I think I might be able to make it till November because of that.
Yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, you get it from above and below.
Yeah, because right now I think it's
that sounded dirty, but yeah.
Yeah, it kind of did. Just ignore that, please.
Gee whiz, Sue Thomas. My goodness. I think it's like 68 still. 67, 68. So we're doing
see,
okay.
See, that's livable. I'm at 68 right now.
So yeah. When I left, I popped it down to 67 when I left the house. That way, you know, it'll stay at that. But Fred, we're worried about you at 62.
Here we are.
Thank you.
You have big fuzzy socks.
A little discoloring, a little pale today in the face. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
I am wearing a sweater.
He is wearing a sweater. I had a pretty good weekend. It wasn't very active. Did stuff around the house. Now let's talk about Mizzou and Vandy just real quick here, Ethan, because Ethan started telling me things before the show, and I said, shut it. hold it for the show. So we haven't really shared our thoughts. I was, you know, that was one of those games on Saturday where it was almost to the point where I was too nervous to watch because this is what happens. I get so emotionally involved. But I did watch from start to finish. And I said on Friday, and I thought that we had a good shot in this game because of the defense. And I like the fact that all of the emphasis, you know, they had College Game Day there. And all the emphasis was on Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt. And I thought that was great. And our defense came out. They did exactly what they needed to do. We had a couple of bad breaks. They probably had a couple of bad breaks. And in the end, Bo Prabula, the quarterback for Mizzou, Sue, I don't know if you followed any of the minutiae here, but he got hurt, right?
I did see the video of them taking him off the field, and I thought, oh, this isn't good.
And he's out for the season. We found that out today. Sam Horn was the other quarterback that we had, and there was a, just as a, you know, reminder, there was a healthy quarterback competition going into the first game, and then Sam Horn gets hurt the first couple of plays of the game that he played in. So now you're down to this freshman, this true freshman, who hasn't even really played a lot in the last couple of years, period,
wow.
because he was injured during his
broke
senior year in high school. And this guy's name is what, Matt Zollers?
Matt Zollers, yep.
He was incredible. He comes into the game. He doesn't look nervous. I mean, you think he's only going to hand the ball off just to be cautious. He doesn't. He shows a lot of patience in the pocket.
Wow.
And he looked like he was the real deal. So now, I mean, calling this realistically, Ethan, you could pretty much say, I mean, it's not impossible, but you can probably say with two losses, they're out of the CFP, unless they run the table here and something miraculous happens. However, you got A&M coming into town in 2 weeks because there's another bye. They're really good. I'd be shocked if we can win that game. But look, we got a new quarterback, and it looks like we got a real deal, and let's see if we can get him some playing time, right?
You have to win out. You have to win out to have a chance, and there's some tough ones. Texas A&M, the number 3 team in the country, just went into Death Valley and is the reason that Brian Kelly is no longer the head coach at LSU.
Them, didn't
they beat him by 24, and the score didn't even tell the story there. They beat him by worse than 24. So, and then you got to go to Oklahoma still. You got to go to Arkansas still. I know that they've had the advantage there the last couple years. That's still going to be a tough place to play. Tough for Mizzou. If so many things were moving in the right direction for them this year, you hate seeing Bo go down. And then you didn't even mention, and kudos to Zollers for getting him to this point, Hail Mary attempt on the final play
that was almost
of the
good.
Game
yeah.
caught at the 1 yard line.
Right.
So even after everything that they went through, they still ended up only one play away from tying this game and getting to overtime. Unfortunately for Mizzou, I thought that they outplayed Vanderbilt. They were the better, even with Prabula not looking great.
I think
they
so
had
too.
Better offensive yeah. numbers. The biggest
wow.
difference is they couldn't score in the red zone, and
yeah.
Vanderbilt was able to. And at the end of the day, that really was the only stat that mattered.
On the Hail Mary, would the do you think the 10-second runoff, there was a 10-second runoff at the end of the game, would that have mattered? You had no timeouts, so you still would have had to get up there real quick, right?
I'm trying to recall. I saw the final play on replay, so
yeah.
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
So in other words, since he caught it at the 1 yard line, it the game was over because the clock went out.
Right.
So wasn't there a 10-second runner? Or I'm mixing that up with NFL
know.
Games because there's so many games that are going on. I thought since they didn't have a timeout, they would have had to have gotten down there very quickly to spike the ball just to go in because it was so much downfield. You understand what I'm
the
saying?
The ball was. They were reviewing the time to see if there was any time left.
And there wasn't.
There was not any time left. I don't remember there being a 10-second
maybe I'm wrong
on that
about
final
that.
Play.
All right, so let's take that out of the mix. My point is, if you had a few more seconds, you still
correct.
Would have been challenged because
yes,
I guess it stops on the first down, but you have to get up
for
there pretty
the chains
quickly.
To move, but I mean, even then, I mean,
yeah,
you
yeah,
have
yeah.
to sprint. At that point, you're sprinting 40 yards downfield. The odds of that being able to work would have been
Sue is shaking
really
her head in agreement right now because she's breaking this play down too in her head and she wants to
I'm zooming in on Route 3 on the Illinois side.
Oh, do we have
yeah.
an issue over there right now?
It looks like a slow moving train. But yeah, go continue, please.
Okay. Well, let me talk about something that I find very interesting as we get started. We'll get back into the Mizzou stuff. We got Frank Cusimano in the next hour, and I know Sue is going to want us to talk about fantasy, so put that on your list a little later, Ethan. But you know, we spent much of the latter part of last week, even on the day that we did the birthday party, probably not as much that day because we were focused on the station, but I was amazed, and I really was kind of shocked on Friday when Steve Butts, who was on the roundtable panel, was just losing his mind over this, you know, the White House renovation with the ballroom in the East Wing.
Yes.
And I think I had told you and I shared with the audience, I don't often engage on Facebook these days because I usually get myself into trouble, and I don't post about politics on my own page. I just post bunny pictures and grandchild pictures and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're scrolling through and then you see things and you see people that, like, you used to work with and, you know, and some of the people I know are lefties and I knew that they were lefties when I worked with them, like over on KMOX. But these are people who are taking time to go to the No Kings rally. And then they're just outraged by this whole East Wing situation. And I even said, I think I told you this last week, that I told my friend Rod Lurie, he's a movie director in Hollywood, and he went to West Point. You know, Rod's, he usually is not crazy, but on the Trump front, he has TDS. He has a really, really bad case of TDS, which people have. It's serious. There is no hope for you. There's no vaccine or anything like that. So he posts something last week, and I decide to get involved. I'm like, all right, let me take a shot at this in a different way. Let's just say that there were some upgrades that were needed for this particular part of the White House, and there's no tax dollars that are going to it. So why is that such an awful thing? Well, because he's doing it, and he's not asking. The plans aren't being submitted, and it's too much, and it's opulent, you know, too much, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, really? But you know who agrees with me on this front? You know who agrees with those of us who say this is not that big of a deal and probably in the end it's going to be a good thing for not only the presidents that will inhabit the residence of the White House, because he's not tearing down the White House, okay? It's a very small portion of the White House campus. The Washington Post agrees with me on this, Sue. Oh, wait, there's another one. The New York Times agrees with me.
Oh, seriously, the New York Times.
Oh, yeah. So it's hilarious. And I don't know if I sent this. I can't remember if I sent this yet to Steve Butts, because I really am shocked at how the other side is reacting to this. So this actually gave me hope in the sense that they took a fair. Now, look, is this Barry Weiss? Is this, you know, Bezos over at the Washington Post saying, OK, we got to give this stuff a little bit more of a chance looking at it through a different lens? Don't get me wrong. Barry Weiss is not running the Washington Post, right? She's running CBS News, which, by the way, we have interesting news out of CBS News today. Fred, you see this? John Dickerson.
Yeah.
Out. No loss. Bye-bye.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's leaving. He's one of the first to go. But so here's what the Washington Post says. The teardown of the White House's East Wing this week is a Rorschach test. Many see the rubble as a metaphor for President Trump's reckless disregard of norms and rule of law, a reflection of his willingness to bulldoze history and to temple a second Gilded Age paid for by corporate donors. Others see what they love about Trump, a lifelong builder boldly pursuing a grand vision, a change agent unafraid to decisively take on the status quo, and a developer slashing through red tape that would stymie any normal politician. I thought that was actually a very fair opening, you know, statement in that opinion. And they kind of go through all of this and they talk about the redesign, et cetera. And they say how, you know, the White House is exempt from some of the regulations that other federal buildings must comply with because it's so different than anything else in America. But then later on, when you kind of read down here, they talk about how, you know, other presidents have done this. And he joins a long list of presidents who have left their imprint on the White House. They mentioned Teddy Roosevelt. They mentioned Taft, Richard Nixon, Harry Truman, etc. And they close by saying this: the White House cannot simply be a museum to the past, because that's what the East Wing was. Like America, it must evolve with the times to maintain its greatness. Strong leaders reject calcification. In that way, Trump's undertaking is a shot across the bow at NIMBYs everywhere. Holy smokes. That was the Washington Post. And this is where, you know, maybe if you have left-wing friends out there that are going nuts and they're apoplectic about this, you can share with them. Say, that's unusual, because I've done it a couple of times on Facebook today to my left-wing friends because I couldn't help myself. And I can't wait to see the reaction that says, you know, my outrageous position on the East Wing of the White House and all the horrific pictures that you have posted on Facebook, family and friends. Well, guess what? Your lunatic left-wing legacy media, who's just about bat-playing crazy on everything else, they actually saw it our way. You know why? Because our way is the correct way to look at it, instead of the knee-jerk TDS reaction that you are.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather.
It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All hats. Why don't we kind of go through what we're going to do here a little bit on the Monday show. Bob Moffitt's going to be with us. I haven't spoken with Bob in a long time. He is with the Heritage Foundation. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on with the healthcare situation and the shutdown. It was a big hurricane down near, I guess, really heading toward Jamaica, that has a ton of rain, like 40 inches or something like that associated with it. It doesn't look like it's going to hit the continental U.S. It's going to head toward Cuba and Bermuda and then head out to the northeast, I believe. But Dave Murray's going to join us after the top of the hour at 4 o'clock with an update on that. Curtis Houck from Newsbusters with us this afternoon. We have Congresswoman Wagner in the 5 o'clock hour. It's day 27 of her pretty much being at home. Working, of course, in the district, but Mike Johnson, the speaker, has now called them back to D.C., and there's another vote that's scheduled later today to keep the government open. Frank Mealy will be with us in the 5 o'clock hour as well. I didn't mention Cusimano. Frank will be here. We got a big game with the Chiefs tonight on Monday Night Football. Probably not as compelling if Jaden Daniels was still healthy quarterbacking for the Commanders, but lo and behold, he is not. So we'll just wish for a Chiefs win, if you will. I think we have Josh Hammer, who is on the fancy line that makes it sound like he's right here in the studio with us. Testing, testing. Josh, is that you? How are you?
Mark, I'm doing just fine, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing good for a Monday. I want to talk some Middle East peace and some of the other things that are happening, but let me just get your thoughts here. I have to know what you think. I just spent the monologue kind of going off on this East Wing renovation story, which the left just lost their minds on this, Josh, last week, and it was so funny to me. And without any help from the Washington Post, the New York Times, I said to many of them, hey, maybe we need some renovations, okay? And it's not taxpayer dollars. And then lo and behold, those two major newspapers come in and actually take my side and our side of that particular story. I was shocked, Josh, when that happened.
Well, the Washington Post, believe it or not, I mean, looks like it's a slightly different editorial board. I mean, it's a slightly different opinion page makeup right now. Jeff Bezos did announce that he was doing something of a shakeup at the Post earlier this year. I think many rolled their eyes at that, very much including myself. But look, you know, I can't say that I personally know the new gentleman who is the opinion editor over there at the Washington Post, but he is apparently a friend of numerous friends of mine, and I'm told that he is right of center for whatever it is worth. So, you know, after he was hired and after Bezos announced the shakeup, you did see a slew of liberal columnists, folks like Ruth Marcus, who then promptly resigned. I believe Jen Rubin was out there as well. You know, they're basically, from what I can tell, kind of a softer version, Mark, of what we at Newsweek have been doing for the past 5-6 years, give or take, which is just trying to platform the whole panoply of viewpoints there. But I look, I mean, it feels kind of hard to say. It feels weird, right? Because yeah. I mean, I'm used to calling the Washington Post kind of in the same breath as the New York Times, but they apparently are trending in the right direction, believe it or not.
Well, and you know, then you have, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on with Curtis Salk, you know, you have Barry kind of taking over CBS as that yep. was announced, and then, you know, John Dickerson leave CBS News today. Kind of have to wonder all of the things that might happen as a result of that. And if we're going to get a little bit more of a fair media treatment here from, you know, 60 Minutes CBS morning show or any of these other outlets associated with CBS News, I'd like to think that we will.
Look, I wish Barry Weiss the best of luck. Barry and I are very friendly. I've known her for some years now. I've written for her publication, The Free Press, numerous times. I genuinely, honest to God, wish her the best. She has a daunting, serious task ahead of her,
no
to put
doubt.
It mildly. Yeah. I mean, you know, Mark, I mean, of the big three networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, it's kind of all just a competition of who stinks the smelliest. But if you had to pick one, you probably would have picked CBS. I would have.
And because here's the deal with CBS, I have some, you know, personal connection to the way that they have portrayed St. Louis. And, you know, it'd be awesome, and this will never happen, but in the back of my mind, it would be awesome to have a group of those CBS reporters who probably, Josh, in their mind, have done nothing wrong, right? They have journalistic integrity. But with Bill Whitaker in particular, I'd love to have Barry sit down with Bill. I'd maybe love to be in that room and say, Bill, you went to St. Louis. You did a story on this prosecutor, Kim Gardner, who was very controversial in St. Louis. You basically, you know, didn't talk to anyone that may have had a different opinion because her, you know, narration was this is just racist. Well, then we came to find out, Josh, and I'm sure you followed a little of the Kim Gardner saga, that it was a lot more than that. It wasn't race. And there were plenty of Democrats here in St. Louis who were black, white, or otherwise who would have criticized Kim Gardner and called it the way they saw it. But 60 Minutes chose not to do that because they had their narrative safely in hand. And that's what these media organizations do all too often.
Well, 60 Minutes, let's not forget, just last fall, egregiously edited Kamala Harris's word salad interview to try to paint her in a more favorable light before she still went ahead and then lost all 7 swing states. It was quite reminiscent of the depths to which big tech and then the FBI, et cetera, went when it came to the Hunter Biden laptop back in 2020. So CBS was at the forefront of that. CBS were the moderators of the vice presidential debate, which was a horrifically moderated debate. They were also the same network last year that made Tony Dokapil, one of their anchors, do essentially a Maoist struggle session in real time for having the temerity, for having the chutzpah to actually challenge the race hustler Ta-Nehisi Coates on some of the suppositions for his
right.
very, very far left book. They essentially forced Tony Dokapil, this Jewish anchor, to literally engage in a DEI struggle session for asking Ta-Nehisi Coates some tough questions about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So they are really far down the ideological rabbit hole, and Barry Weiss and that whole crew have a huge task ahead of them, but I genuinely wish them the best of luck because it's very, very important that we get this right.
Josh Hammer, how would you right now clarify or qualify, I guess, the situation with Middle East peace? We had a lot of celebration when these hostages were, you know, handed back over. Obviously, these peace deals and any ceasefire agreements are always fragile. What's your sense of where this stands right now?
Well, it seems like Hamas is on something of a ticking clock at this point. They're facing this Trump ultimatum where disarm or else dot dot dot. I think we're going to find out, Mark, sooner rather than later, what that dot 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 consists of, because I mean, this is just yet another reminder that Hamas is not a cold, calculating, rational actor. You know, these are not the atheistic Soviets at the height of the Cold War. We can kind of game out their moves on a game theory chessboard. No, these are radical 7th century aspiring fanatical Islamists. And they mean what they say when they say they're not going to stop until all the Jews or all the quote unquote infidels, by which they mean Jews, Christians, and frankly, a lot of Muslims too. They're not going to stop until they're all killed. So they're not going to voluntarily lay down their arms. So what is the enforcement mechanism there? What exactly is happening on the ground? It's a little hard to say, to be honest with you. It's a little unclear exactly what is going on a day-to-day basis at this exact time inside Gaza. What I definitely feel confident in predicting, Mark, is that the Israelis are not going to wait forever. They understand that if Hamas is just simply not going to abide by the deal, then why should Israel abide by the deal? I mean, that's the whole point of a deal. I mean, if you have both sides agree, that's great. But if Hamas is going to flagrantly violate the deal and not return the dead bodies of the hostages, which is literally what they're doing right now, then at some point Israel is going to go back in, and then the bombs are probably going to start dropping in there, and then we'll see what President Trump does. God willing, none of this happens, obviously. God willing, there's a way to actually get Hamas to lay down their arms, but easier said than done, to put it mildly.
So, meantime, President Trump is focusing on a different part of the world right now because he's going to meet with President Xi of China. What are the realistic expectations? You know, he's always been one, and I heard him repeat this again. He compliments President Xi, saying he's a strong leader. He has a good relationship with him. So what's this meeting this week going to end up in? And will there be friction or some agreements coming out of this?
Well, if you looked at the reporting from yesterday, Scott Bessent was all over the Sunday News show. It was basically saying that the U.S. and China have a preliminary framework in place for a deal. It's hard to know whether or not that's spin or whether or not it actually reflects the reality on the ground. I guess we'll find out sooner rather than later. You know, one question that I have, Mark, kind of just thinking from Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party's perspective, if you look at the hero's welcome that Donald Trump got yesterday in Southeast Asia for securing this truce, this peace deal between Thailand and Cambodia, this wonderful reception for him in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. He's now in Japan, where he is very warmly welcomed by the Japanese people. You know, does Xi Jinping in China think about that? Is he sobered a little bit when it comes to the fact that Trump is such a welcome figure all throughout the Indo-Pacific? I'm not sure I know the answer to that question there. What I do know is that when Trump sits down with Xi, he really ought to remember that for whatever China is, and they are a powerful country, they have a much stronger military than many here in the United States would care to admit. They are a serious, serious, serious threat, to be clear, for sure. But on the other hand, the United States still has the leverage. We still have the stronger economy, still have stronger financial capital, human capital, social capital, all of the above. And as long as the United States enters these negotiations with that kind of mentality and that kind of leverage, and is not just reeking of desperation to get a deal, then I am pretty optimistic.
How do you react to something like this? This is, I haven't played this audio yet. This is James Carville, who I think has lost his mind.
He hates the United States. He hates the Republican Party. He hates any kind of system that we have here, any kind of rules. And they're going to, I hate to be like this, being an old man, but I'm telling you, we had a really dangerous point in the United States. And I believe that from the bottom of my heart. And a lot of other people I know that are really smart historians, people that know this, totally agree with me. It's bad. It's dangerous.
Yeah, you know, I can make a case that he's talking about Mamdani, not President Trump. But there are all these people out there that feel like there is this threat, this existential threat out there. In the meantime, they're paying a lot less at the gas, you know, tank. Inflation is down. The stock market's in record territory. Nobody's crossing the border illegally. We're kicking criminals out of this country who should be kicked out. There's so much to complain about, Josh, really, if you think about it, right?
You know, James Carville has become kind of the Bill Kristol of the left, hasn't he? Talk about a case of just pure, unadulterated Trump derangement syndrome of someone who was a more relevant figure back in the 1990s into the 2000s. I mean, it's a very sad scent for James Carville, who once upon a time was a somewhat moderate figure. I mean, he was the whole "it's the economy, stupid" guy. I mean, he really kind of rose to prominence on the Democratic side of the aisle back once upon a time when the Democratic Party was fundamentally an economic issue, bread and butter issue, kitchen table kind of party, not this post-2008, post-Barack Obama woke intersectional monstrosity. So he's kind of a victim of the times, kind of a casualty of the times, and the Trump derangement doesn't help that, but he's really just kind of grasping at straws here, just ultra desperate, it seems, to try and stay relevant in a party that's kind of left him in the dust.
What's weird about Carville is, and there's a couple of them out there like that, he's not unwilling to criticize the Democrats for kind of going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs on some of these issues. But then, you know, in the same breath, he's got to go total TDS on you. And this whole notion, you know, J.B. Pritzker said the same thing, like we're on the cusp of it has been this bad since the Civil War. I mean, how can anyone take that seriously? But they do on the left, and, you know, especially the fanatics. That's why they're so worked up about everything this guy does, including the East Wing, you know, designations or changes, if you will. Josh, always great to have you on. You can hear the Josh Hammer Show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on 97.1 KFTK. You know, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary last week, Josh. 25 years this radio station's been around doing great stuff here in St. Louis.
Amazing stuff, Mark. Congratulations to you and the whole team there.
Thank you, Josh. We'll talk soon.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather.
It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, there's a big hurricane that is targeting Jamaica. Dave Murray's going to give us the update on that and our weather live after 4 o'clock. We have a Monday edition of Sue's News coming up as well in the next hour. And we'll also talk in the 5 o'clock hour with Congresswoman Ann Wagner about the healthcare subsidies and the shutdown issue. Robert Moffitt is back with us. Heritage senior researcher wrote about the failures of Obamacare. You know, I was mentioning this Washington Post editorial from the weekend where they kind of called it accurately on the East Wing. They kind of did that the week before, too, because they admitted something shockingly in the Washington Post editorial where they said the real problem is that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was never actually affordable. And I'm so confused by that because, again, Senator McCaskill told me time and time and time again, that's what it was about. Lower premiums, lowering the cost of health care. And it just didn't seem to happen, Claire. I don't know what happened. Robert Moffitt back with us this afternoon. Bob, how are you? Welcome back to 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm great. It's good to be with you, Mark.
Well, sure. this subsidies issue, kind of explain your perspective on this, because this is dragging down the entire conversation about the shutdown itself. I think that the Democrats feel like they have polling that kind of falls on their side when health care kind of gets into the discussion. There might be, you know, something to that, but I also don't see how they get out of this right now, and the Republicans have committed to having discussions about these subsidies.
Yeah, of course. I think, though, that the Washington Post, and I hate to admit it, but the Washington Post really got it right. During the healthcare debate, President Obama promised more than one occasion, constantly promised, that if you enacted his signature legislation, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, the result would be that we would bend the cost curve downward. He also made a very bold prediction. He said that the typical American family would see a yearly reduction in their health insurance premium costs of $2,500. Now, here's the thing, Mark. Even with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, these were crazy claims, actually. And now, of course, everything has come to fruition. We're looking at a program that is really dramatically driving healthcare costs through the roof. And there's no question about it. Now they want to paper it over with subsidies. you know, as if, you know, putting, you know, taxpayer dollars on top of it, you know, to hide the costs will really change anything. It's really absurd. And so we're looking at massive premium cost increases. We're looking at deductibles that are soaring into the stratosphere. We're looking at declines in competition and choice in the markets. And you're looking at reduced access to medical professionals because these plans have very, very narrow networks. It's right now, it's 80% of all the Obamacare plans have restrictive access to medical professionals. In other words, the plans don't contract with a lot of doctors and hospitals.
Right, right. So,
we're in a mess here. We're in an absolute mess.
Yeah, because there doesn't seem to be any, you know, like even if you extend the subsidies again, they were meant to be temporary. That's not going to solve the overall, you know, issue with the rising premiums and the cost of healthcare. So there would be, I mean, what's your opinion of the Republicans if they get the government back open? They're probably going to negotiate on this front because they do know that they have people in their districts that are going to be affected by this.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, look, I don't know if you realize, know this or not, but House Speaker Johnson today indicated that they are going to put together a major health care reform package based on work that they've been doing for the past 5 years that never got enacted. So, you know, you're looking at, I think the Republicans are going to come up with a pretty attractive reform package. I don't have any doubt about that. There's no question. I mean, Congress has got to deal with the subsidies. I think that Congress has got to clearly make sure that lower income and lower middle income Americans can secure affordable coverage. That's not on the table. What's on the table is the fact that this sounds crazy, but Obama and Congress established an income cap for the taxpayer subsidies at 400% of the federal poverty level. Now, for a family of four, that's $128,000 today. So what the congressional Democrats want to do is they want to abolish that six-figure cap, and they want to subsidize rich people. I mean, basically. Now, this is insane, and it's also kind of a weird new version of the social contract, because what that means is they actually, you know, are successful in doing this, is that lower-income working people who are, in many cases, buying their own insurance are going to end up subsidizing higher-income beneficiaries, Obamacare beneficiaries, and indefinitely, if you listen to what the Democrats...
Yeah, they want to make it permanent. Well, and we know this, by the way, this isn't just conjecture. We know this, Bob, to be true, because Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota actually tweeted last week about this poor couple in her state of Minnesota who had retired early. They were so well off. They retired at the age of 52, but gosh darn it, they want the taxpayers to subsidize them at $15,000 a year, or they may have to go back to work again, these poor people, because they retire 20 years before most people do. I'm very concerned about them.
Oh, well, if you understand the ultimate ideological objective of the left, is the whole point is they're not concerned specifically about whether or not, you know, low income people can or cannot have health insurance coverage. What they are really concerned about is they're concerned about expanding the power of the federal government over the health care financing and delivery of a larger and larger set of Americans. Ultimately, most of them in the House, anyway, really want a British style or a Canadian style single payer system where the government runs everything and controls the entire health care system from top to bottom. And now we know how that works. We've got a lot of experience with that. I don't think that it's going to work in America. Frankly, if they did that, American medical clinics would look like Soviet grocery stores. It would be a real mess. But I think what we're looking at now, Mark, is we're looking at lunacy. I mean, the Democrats in the Senate have repeatedly voted against a rational, clean, you know, resolution.
It's unbelievable. It really is.
It's unbelievable to reopen the government. And they want to, at the same time, within this 7-week period, think of it, they want to add another $1.5 trillion in total spending. I mean, this is insanity.
And it's not working, I don't think. I don't think their strategy is working, which makes me wonder, I mean, how the hell? We're going to get to another deadline. Like, let's say they just pass this thing tonight. We'd be 3 weeks until another deadline, and you'd have to do it all again. So I'm not sure how the Democrats are going to get out of this. It's going to be fascinating. But I'm not in the camp that would say cave at all. And I don't think Mike Johnson and John Thune are ready to do that in any way, shape, or form.
Well, why should they?
Yeah,
I mean, this is their look. First of all the level of spending that Johnson has agreed to with the clean resolution. Let's be clear about this, and everybody listening to this program has got to be clear about this. This is not the Trump administration's level of spending. This is the Biden administration's level of spending, and amidst a massive deficit. An increasingly dangerous debt, which is now over $37 trillion, these clowns want to add $1.5 trillion in total spending. I mean, it's nuts, to be honest.
They don't care. They want their federal funding for, you know, NPR and PBS back. That's one thing that they're asking for.
It's crazy. I mean, but NPR and PBS, I mean, yeah, of course they want that, but that's not the big ticket stuff. You know, it's basically the Medicaid eligibility. Oh, yeah, Medicaid eligibility for illegal aliens. That's on their wish list. It's, temporary COVID-era emergency subsities.
Permanent. Right. That's the part you wonder because you hear about all this stuff, and that's one of the issues that the legacy media likes to leave out. They don't like to focus on the fact that these things were temporary and extended twice because of, you know, the situation. Yeah. I'll be very curious, Bob. I really am, because I don't know how they get out of this without, a big loss and getting painted as the ones who were the losers here. Robert Moffitt, always great to have you on. It's been a little while, Bob. Thank you so much.
Okay, Mark.
All right. Yeah, take care. Listen to, I have a lot of audio to share here this afternoon, but listen to some of the lunacy that happened over the weekend. For example, here's AOC at a rally in New York City.
This city was built by the Irish escaping famine, Italians fleeing fascism, Jews escaping Holocaust, Black Americans fleeing slavery and Jim Crow, Latinos seeking a better life, Native people standing for themselves, Asian Americans coming together. Queens, in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, in Manhattan, in Staten Island, in this country, in a vision to build the freest, toughest, and greatest city on earth.
I don't remember the plan, including having 12 million to 20 million, God knows what the number was, stream across the border. Not only people from South America and Mexico, but Chinese nationals. And others from, Africa. It was quite an event. Many of your friends never saw this because they didn't cover it in the mainstream media. But she just went nuts over the weekend, of course.
We are the standard. We are the acceptance. And we set the bar for America. I'm talking to you, Donald Trump.
So there are several things. I'm not a very spiritual man, but, man, I would pray for AOC to somehow lock up the nomination for president in a couple of years because I think it could be really, really entertaining. And even Bernie Sanders says, yeah, she's going to be great.
I think at this particular moment in American history, having establishment-type candidates doesn't really cut it.
You and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have a very warm relationship.
I happen to think she is an incredibly intelligent person. And in the best sense of the word, a very, very good politician.
Do you think she would be a formidable presidential candidate as someone that's done it twice?
Yeah, I think she would. And I think other people would as well. So that's her decision to make.
Bernie coming off a week where he had to defend. I love it when they ask him about his private, plane. Oh, it doesn't matter because you can't. It's not logistically possible for a United States senator to go here and to go there without, having a private plane. So I can destroy the climate while you can't because I'm special and I'm a member of the U.S. Senate. That's basically what he said. Now, the country will be looking at this particular city of New York, which AOC referred to in a couple of weeks when the communist is going to win for mayor. I mean, there is virtually zero chance that Mamdani's not going to win this. Curtis Sliwa, it even wouldn't matter if he gets out of the race. He's the Republican. He says he's not getting out. Doesn't matter. Eric Adams has endorsed Andrew Cuomo. I can't believe that that's a terrible choice, so people aren't going to make it. Andrew Cuomo has done enough damage there. And I even gave Mamdani some credit last week because he had a pretty good line about Andrew Cuomo, and I don't mean to laugh about it because it was pretty serious, sending, you know, older people into their deaths into the nursing homes during, you know, COVID, which is outrageous and never really was dealt with effectively. But this guy is going to win. So here's Bill Maher talking about how the country's going to be watching here.
I think the whole Democratic Party in the country is on the ballot, and the whole country will be looking at this race to see which way are the Democrats going to go.
Yeah, which way will they go? Well, they'll go communist. That's where they'll go.
No longer will we allow the Republican Party to be the one of ambition. No longer will we have to open a history book to read about Democrats leading with big ideas. My friends, the world is changing.
Yeah, I think the world is changing, but I don't think it's changing in the way that Mr. Mamdani thinks it could change in New York. And he will have very little power to really make any of the changes. And they focus on Trump all the time and the promises kept and the promises made. He won't really be able to do anything that he says that he wants to do in New York City. But that does not keep one of the, you know, we talk about leadership. AOC is certainly a leader. Bernie Sanders in the Democratic Party. Kamala's out there. Wait, I think I even have a bite from her. She thinks she can still win again, right? She can run again. That's essentially what she said over the weekend. Look, here's both Kamala and Newsom.
Is it fair to say after the 2026 midterms, you're going to give it serious thought?
Yeah, I'd be lying otherwise. I'd just be lying.
Well, you lie enough, Gavin. Why would it trouble you right now? I don't know why that would even be an issue.
I can't do that.
Could it be you? Possibly. Have you made a decision yet?
No, I have not.
But you say in your book, I'm not done.
That is correct. I am not done. I have lived my entire career a life of service, and it's in my bones.
Isn't that great?
I mean, come on. Come on, Kamala. Here she is on her book tour talking about Biden's age.
There is a very serious difference between capacity to be president of the United States and the capacity to run for president of the United States. And so it is on that latter piece that I talk about in the book, about my concern.
Why?
About his ability with the level of endurance, energy that it requires, especially running against now the current president.
So essentially, I mean, she's word salad all the time, but if I got that right, she said Biden, despite the fact that he could barely be aware or cognitively aware of where he was and that he was slobbering on himself and that he was, you know, not remembering things on a constant basis, he was okay to do that. But the rigors of modern day campaigning is what he wasn't set up for. So that, I think that's what she said. But with Kamala, I'm telling you, you just never know.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.